are one or two things you need for a successful wedding. Tact.
So, John, how's that gorgeous girlfriend of yours?
She's no longer my girlfriend.
Ah, yeah. Still, I wouldn't get too gloomy about it. Rumour has it she never stopped bonking old Toby DeLisle, just in case you didn't work out.
She is now my wife.
A discreet best man.
When Bernard told me he was getting engaged to Lydia, I congratulated him because all his other girlfriends had been such complete dogs.
Although, may I say how delighted we are to have so many of them here this evening.
Delightful guests.
How do you do? My name is Charles.
Don't be ridiculous. Charles died 20 years ago.
Must be a different Charles, I think.
Are you telling me I don't know my own brother?
No, no.
An experienced vicar.
Who lives and reigns with you and the holy goat. Ghost.
And a loving bride.
I do.
A film with a message. Don't get married. Unless you fall recklessly in love.
I feel it in my finger. I feel it in my toe.
What do you think?
Divine.
The love is all around me. And so the feeling goes.
Hugh Grant and Andy McDowell invite you to Four Weddings and a Funeral.
It's everywhere.
The Almighty God bless you all. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Four Weddings and a Funeral. Audio Describe. Sunday afternoon at 1 on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Sunday Movie Matinee.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 51 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 40s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 50s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 11 a.m.
Welcome to the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Produced at the Recording Library of West Texas. Your narrator is Jack.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading some articles from the January 2023 issue of Cowboys and Indians magazine. Think like a horse. Straight from the horse whisperer's Grant Colliher's mouth, this new book offers lessons in life, leadership, and empathy from an unconventional cowboy. With his brand new book, Think Like a Horse, renowned horse trainer, cowboy, author, and owner of Jackson Hole, Wyoming's famous Diamond Cross Ranch, Grant Colliher has authored both a how-to for horse lovers and a guide to thoughtful professional and personal leadership for anyone, no matter if you've never saddled up. The book, released last year from Putnam Sons, shares stories from Colliher's life and his work helping both horses and people throughout its 12 chapters. You'll learn that as a young boy with a rough childhood, Colliher was naturally inclined to train his father's mules with childlike kindness and understanding. But he had shifted away from that inclination as an adult horse trainer and professional polo player. It wasn't until Colliher learned the techniques of natural horsemanship from famous horse whisperers like Ray Hunt and Tom Durance that he realized there was a better way. Training a horse didn't have to involve pain, fear, or force. After successfully applying this quieter, gentler technique of understanding and communication to hundreds of horses, Colliher started to see it was having an effect on people outside of the round pen. Horses have an extraordinary ability to reveal people to themselves, he writes. This will come as no surprise to horse owners who know their steeds have a sixth sense. Reading body language and emotion, horses seem to know what you're thinking, probably even before you think it, It's no doubt they're powerful healers for us humans. Collier began to notice people around him taking a hard look at themselves and their own styles of communication and leadership after watching him with troubled equines. He saw that having grace and patience to help a horse reach its highest potential and overcome the scars of its past was a philosophy that could be applied effectively to humans. So began Collier's journey as more than a horse trainer. He now teaches CEOs, managers, and other business leaders how to better communicate with their teams, companies, and even their own families. He's worked with convicts trying to overcome their past and military veterans suffering from PTSD. The truth is, it's the horses who do the teaching. I just try to translate. Think Like a Horse shares plenty of gems for navigating life. Its pages are filled with wise words spoken by cowboys inviting drill. You'll read about how setting boundaries with a rude horse is the same as setting boundaries with people, and why those limits are needed to preserve the friendship. Parents will recognize Gallagher's approach to keeping his horses in line as insightful for raising their own wild and occasionally unruly children. Employers can incorporate Gallagher's emphasis on giving a horse freedom and autonomy to create true partnerships with employees. Gallagher expertly weaves this ideas and many more than old cowboy sayings from an empathetic perspective, sharing stories of people he's met, including former employees who struggled with addiction and even homelessness, who have been helped by working on the ranch with Gallagher's family and their horses. As the publisher astutely observed, it's his hard-won horse sense that has given Gallagher a unique ability to teach invaluable lessons that anyone can use to live a fuller, more successful life. Sometimes you'll laugh, sometimes you'll tear up. You'll always find yourself not wanting to miss a word of Gallagher's wisdom. Reading the book, I started thinking about how to better communicate with my own horses. I love them, but they don't always see eye to eye, kind of like some humans in our lives. By the end, I was also thinking about relationships with co-workers and even family members, and all those dynamics that could benefit from Gallagher's insights. Most important, I was thinking, which is no doubt the goal of Think Like a Horse. The Cowboy Way. This award-winning group is serious about its heritage, but eclectic with its styles. Want to know what the real deal sounds like? Look no further than the Western music trio, The Cowboy Way. The band members' cowboy's credentials extend well beyond music. Singer-songwriter Doug Figgs knows how to rope and ride, and he shoes horses for a living. He's got broken bones held together with screws and plates to prove it. Jim Jones, multi-instrumentalist, grew up in Beaumont, Texas, surrounded by deep piney woods, and he absorbed the works of the great Texas songwriters, Guy Clark in particular. German World League guitarist Marion Funk heard the cowboy call when he moved to the West 30 years ago, working on horse ranches and learning vital skills. I've always had a deep fascination with the American West, the open spaces, connection to nature, the simplicity of life, Funk says. I felt reborn coming here. The trio is known to cover time-tested cowboy classics at its live shows. Looking for a sizzling version of Ghost Riders in the Sky on YouTube. But the members mostly write and record their own material, and they've won a saddlebag full of awards for it. They took the International Western Music Association's Group of the Year prize 4 times in a row, every year from 2017 to 2021, with no recipient named in 2020 due to the pandemic. I bring the Texas influence, Doug was influenced by Southern rock, and Marion played in folk groups. We really complement each other's styles and are pretty good pickers, Jones says. Our sound is more contemporary than most cowboy bands. We owe as much to the Eagles and bluegrass as we do the sons of the pioneers. When it comes to writing lyrics, a shared love of history guides the musicians in the cowboy way. Their songs are well researched, with subject matter grounded in real life stories and characters. Good West, for example, is about immigrants migrating west after the Civil War, searching for a new life. Flow River's Flow deals with the importance of water to the West's survival. In preparation for a tour of Scotland a few years ago, they wrote It's a Cowboy I Will Be, a true story of Scottish exiles who made their way west as skilled cattle drovers. The song begins with elements from the cherished Scottish folk tune The Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond. When they performed it live on the tour, Scottish fans heard the opening melody and immediately stood, cheered, and danced. And they loved our cowboy hats, Fig says. We did a lot of trading of hats. Even as their international audience grows, the band's players aren't losing sight of home. We are proud of the way we represent and honor the Western lifestyle that we know and love so well, Fig says. The Cowboy Way is passionate about this amazingly beautiful land and its history, Funk adds. There is no better way to celebrate the truth than through our music, so the people who really know the West feel proud, and those who don't are excited to learn more. Preserving Western Pulp Fiction. Dime novelist enthusiasts at two universities are cataloging and digitizing the stories that thrilled generations of Western fans more than a century ago. By David Hofstede. In his later years, the legendary frontiersman Kit Carson was shown one of the hundreds of dime novels allegedly chronicling his heroic exploits. One of the stories, Frank Starr's American Novels, number 139, included the illustration of Carson slaying seven Indians with one hand while he clasped a fainting maiden with the other. He adjusted his spectacles, studied it a long time, and finally said, "That there may have happened, but I ain't got no recollection of it." From the first one in 1860 to the early 1920s, dime novels delivered up to 30,000 words of thrilling tales for a mere 10 cents. The books were cheaply made and not designed to stand the test of time, but thankfully two fans of the genre have embarked on a project to preserve these stories online for future generations. At Northern Illinois University, digital collections and metadata librarian Matthew Short oversees a project to digitize nine novels, which began with those published by Beal and Adams, the company that launched the dime novel craze. That project has since expanded to include works produced by other prominent publishers. Dime novels are enormously significant in the development of the history of the popular fiction in the U.S., and they provide insight into what a vast and diverse group of people in the late 19th century were thinking. My motivation is to preserve them before they fall apart and are lost forever. At Villanova University, Director of Library Technology Damian Katz's mission began with an unexpected discovery. He had a dime novel collection moldering in our basement that we didn't even know existed until we found it by accident. Once we did, we decided it needed preservation, and it just snowballed from there. Meet the Beatles. The Beal and Adams books provided a natural starting point for NIU as Erastus Beadle and his brother Irwin are generally credited with inventing the dime novel format with the release of Maleska, Indian Life of the White Hunter, published in 1860, while paperbound publications had been around for decades, the Beatles were the first to issue stories in a continuous series, often with the same characters, in a fixed size and at the standard price of one dime. Some lines were even cheaper, with a 5 cent cover price. At the beginning, the westerns were the most popular genre, Short says. They were eventually joined by mystery and detective fiction, but stories about cowboys and bandits never really went away. Most of the early sagas were more reality-based, chronicling the struggles and daily lives of frontiersmen and later westward-bound pioneers. The popularity of Maleska, with its heightened drama, romance, and tragedy, convinced the Beatles there were bigger profits in taller tales. They filled the newsstands with the adventures of Wild Bill Hickok, Buffalo Bill, Texas Jack, Kit Carson, Dan the Boone, Davy Crockett, Calamity Jane, California Joe Miller, James Cappin, Grizzly Adams, and many more. The tradition within Westerns has always been to incorporate historical figures into stories, but at that time these figures were not historical. They were very much contemporary. Dime novels had no hesitation about telling a story right out of the headlines. There's one called Custer's Last Shot about Custer's Last Stand, which was on the newsstand within months of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Some of the heroes of these tales, like Buffalo Bill Cody, even took to chronicling their own lives under their own names or through a ghostwriter. Prentiss Ingraham, who wrote many of the Buffalo Bill stories for the Beatles, worked as an agent for Cody's famed Wild West shows. Deadwood Dick. Surprisingly, the most popular Western character was not a historical figure like Cody or Wild Bill, but a black-garbed anti-hero created by New York novelist Ed Wheeler. Deadwood Dick was a former outlaw trying to outrun his violent past. Debuting in 1877, he appeared in hundreds of books over the next 3 decades. Many readers were convinced that Dick had to be as real as Buffalo Bill and Calamity Jane, who sometimes joined him in his exploits. Even the town of Deadwood, South Dakota, wasn't sure. In 1926, locals wondered about the true identity of a resident named Dick Clark. Clark confessed to being Deadwood Dick and took to dressing the part whenever a journalist needed a story or someone at the bar was buying. He was even brought into Washington to shake hands with President Calvin Coolidge. Television revived the legend with a 1966 episode of Death Valley Days entitled The Resurrection of Deadwood Dick. Blood and Thunder. The success of the dime novels from the Beatles and other prominent publishers did not shield them from accusations of lowering the standards of literature with lowbrow Blood and Thunder stories that had little artistic value. When they were first introduced, dime novels were more mainstream and read by adults as well as children. But by the end of the 19th century, you see certain publishers like Fantuzzi targeting teenagers and young boys, and then the reputation of the format began to change. Stories about Frank and Jesse James raised concerns from postal authorities about distributing works glorifying outlaws. United States Postal Inspector Anthony Comstock not only published a scathing critique of dime novels, but also sent Fantuzzi to prison for allegedly corrupting children and leading them to commit violent acts. Even the inclusion of reprinted stories from Charles Dickens and George Eliot did not cleanse the unsavory reputation of the dime novels, though they may have been just as well, since the Beatles didn't always pay for the publishing rights. These publishers were looking to make money, and as efficiently as possible. And that meant not just selling quick popular fiction in the U.S., but pirating material from overseas. Even Maleska, which helped establish the format, was a story that had first appeared in 20 years earlier in a magazine called The Lady's Companion. In this case, however, author Ann Stevens was compensated for the reprint with $250. Famous writers and famous fans. Ann Stevens was a well-known novelist in her day, as were many of the writers who contributed stories. Perhaps the most famous was Louisa May Alcott, author of Little Women, although her work for dime novels was always published under pseudonyms. Other contributors came from all walks of life. Edward Ellis was a school principal. Ann Emerson Porter was a poet and the second cousin of Ralph Waldo Emerson. Edward Willett was a lawyer. George Aiken was a playwright who was the first to dramatize Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin. Dr. William Mason Turner was a Philadelphia physician, and John Harrison Whitson was an ordained minister. For their labors, writers received anywhere from $75 to $300 per story. That created a popular character with serious potential could earn as much as $1,000 for each entry. That's the equivalent of more than $30,000 today. The audience for these stories was as varied as the authors. Dime novels found their first enthusiastic following among military men serving in the Civil War. But they were also read by top executives and working stiffs, clergymen, and musicians. Mark Twain was a fan, as were Presidents Abraham Lincoln and Woodrow Wilson. Collector contributions welcome. The Beadle and Adams Preservation Project wrapped up in 2019, but NIU and Villanova have been working hard to digitize the dime novels of the publisher Street and Smith, thanks to funding from National Endowment for the Humanities. Additional partners include Stanford University, Bowling Green University, and Oberlin College. Short and Katz are currently digitizing Street and Smith and Frank Tusey thanks to NEH support, and now have their sights set on George and Norman Monroe, brothers who own rival dime novel publishing businesses. In the late 19th century, most libraries did not collect fiction. It was almost collectors who preserved these things, and they are the main reason we have so many today. We identify with any gaps in our holdings on the website, and if people have any that we're missing, we'd be happy to discuss a potential donation or purchase to add to the collection. But with more books and articles being written about dime novels, a revitalized collector's market is beginning to form that might make these vintage publications harder to acquire for those hoping to preserve them. For a long time, it was a mostly forgotten niche market, and you could still find some on eBay for $2 or $3. But now there are titles for that fetch very high prices. There's a lot of room for that collector's market to grow, so I think we got into the project at a good time, before there's too much competition.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading from True West Magazine, January 2023 edition. We're going to continue their articles based on Best of the West 2023 that we started a few weeks ago. Best of the West 2023 Western Preservation by Jana Bombersback and the editors of True West. You can never take the Dakota out of this girl. My Old West Savior columns keep me grounded. I'm a North Dakota girl who now lives in Arizona, but when it comes down to my favorite things like the favorite Old West Savior columns I wrote last year, I don't stray far from home. I went to both the Badlands of North Dakota and the fields of Nebraska. One, because I'm so proud that the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library is being built in Medora. And two, because I've always dreamed that if I had lived in the 1800s, I'd have been one of the thousands of female homesteaders. Let's start with the library. I was sitting with my sister Judy in the handicapped section of the amphitheater outside Medora during the summer of 2021. A new hip was pending, and I needed a walker. Reading the program for the Country Western Variety Show. And there was a fundraising pitch for a presidential library for Teddy that would be built across the street from where I sat. I had never heard of this effort, even though it had been started in 2019 by the governor. News out of North Dakota doesn't go far. But I was instantly proud and happy. I'd find in researching the column that Teddy had been a favorite of both Republicans and Democrats. He himself was originally a Republican who became an independent. Well, he's always been one of my heroes, too. We owe to good old Teddy the Forest Service, a greatly expanded park system, 150 national forests and 5 national parks, encompassing 230 million acres, preserved forever for all Americans, and, by presidential decree, the Grand Canyon. That's such a big thanks that you have to make reservations these days for admission to national parks. That's how much Americans love them. I remember touring a Medora museum dedicated to him when I was in college and finding a man who inspired people to be the hero of their own lives. It rubbed off on me, which is why the Homestead National Historical Park near Beatrice, Nebraska, so speaks to me. Homesteaders risked everything, took their lives in their hands to have their own piece of land and build a life for themselves. Many women, single and married, were among that group, and I've always hoped I'd have been strong enough to be one of them. Maybe that's why my backyard in downtown Phoenix is splendid with trees and shrubs and plants. I actually have a homestead claim on this city plot, taken out even before I realized what it actually meant in history. And I got a bonus when I interviewed Homestead National Historical Park's historian, John Fairchild. He's found a correlation between homesteading women and suffrage. I hope I'd have been front and center for that too. Who said there's no place like home? My, it was a girl next door in Kansas. Best preservation of a historic Western building. The Irma Hotel, Cody, Wyoming. Built by Buffalo Bill Cody in 1902 and named after his daughter, the Irma Hotel is still a gem, adjacent to the Buffalo Bill Center of the West and just outside the east entrance of Yellowstone National Park. Relax in modern accommodations or choose to stay in historic rooms enjoyed by Frederick Remington, Annie Oakley, Calamity Jane, or Bill Cody himself. Don't miss the restaurant and historic saloon with the Cherrywood Bar, a gift to Cody from Britain's Queen Victoria. Online, irmahotel.com. Reader's Choice, Fort Smith National Historic Site, Hanging Judge Parker's Courthouse. Best Preserved Historic Trail, National Historic Santa Fe Trail. In 2021, the bicentennial of the Santa Fe Trail was celebrated from Independence, Missouri to Santa Fe, New Mexico. The famous trade route was first used in 1821 when Missouri trader William Becknell seized the opportunity to open trade with Mexico, which had just won its independence from Spain. Prior to Becknell, American traders who attempted to open trade with the Spanish state of Nuevo Mexico were arrested and taken to Mexico City. Within a few short years, the Santa Fe Trail became one of the continent's most important routes of commerce, connecting world trade routes from Mexico City to New York City and New Orleans. Online, nps.gov. Reader's Choice, Oregon Trail Pony Express. Best Preservation Effort of the West. John Wayne, Birthplace and Museum, Winterset, Iowa. Located in picturesque Madison County, home to the famous covered bridges, the museum has recently expanded from 6,100 to 10,100 square feet of exhibit space. The museum has had over 1 million visitors since it opened in the Duke's childhood home in 1982. Today, the museum has a theater and unique John Wayne exhibits that can only be seen at the Winterset Museum, including a station wagon with a custom roof so the Duke could wear his cowboy hat while driving. The annual John Wayne Birthday celebration is held every Memorial Day weekend and is a fan favorite. Online, johnwaynebirthplace.museum. Reader's Choice, Jesse James Farm and Museum, Kearney, Missouri. Best Preserved Pioneer Town Recreated, Old Cowtown, Wichita, Kansas. Old Cowtown Museum has 54 historic and recreated buildings, 27 of which are original. Built along the Arkansas River in Wichita, the museum is a popular living history center with an outstanding 1860s to 1870s frontier collection. Visitors will step back in time when they enter each building, furnished with historic pieces and materials that provide a window into life in the eastern Kansas City. Online, oldcowtown.org. Reader's Choice, Sturr Museum of the Prairie Pioneer, Grand Island, Nebraska. Best Architecturally Preserved Western Town, Deadwood, South Dakota. The epicenter of the Gold Rush of 1874 to 1876 that transformed the Black Hills, Deadwood was founded to supply the rush of miners everything they needed to survive: supplies, saloons, and soiled doves. Visitors who walk the streets of Deadwood, a National Historic Site since 1961, should start at the visitor center for a map of the city's historic structures, local museums, daily events, and the Mount Moriah Cemetery. Online, deadwood.com. Reader's Choice, Sheridan, Wyoming. Best Historic Cemetery of the West, Tombstone Boot Hill Graveyard, Tombstone, Arizona. The Boomtown's first cemetery was started in 1879, a new city cemetery built in 1884. While many of the original residents buried at Boot Hill have been lost to time, the graves of Tom and Frank McGlory are located where the two brothers were buried after they were killed at the OK Corral. Online, tombstonechamber.com. Reader's Choice, Concordia Cemetery, El Paso, Texas. Best Preserved Historic Fort of the West, Fort Concho, San Angelo, Texas. Built in 1867 as a strategic U.S. Army outpost during the post-Civil War conflict with the Southern Plains tribes, Fort Concho served its purpose effectively until it was closed in 1889. The city of San Angelo handles staffing and the preservation of the historic landmark, museum, and 23 fort buildings. Walk in the footsteps of soldiers and their families who lived at the fort and tour officers' row and quarters, the enlisted men's barracks, post headquarters, hospital, schoolhouse, and chapel. Fort Concho hosts annual living history events, including Buffalo Soldier Heritage Day in February and Fort Concho Frontier Day in April. Online, fortconcho.com. Reader's Choice, Tie, Fort Laramie, Wyoming, and Bent's Old Fort, La Junta, Colorado. True West Magazine Best of the West 2023 Western Fair, F-A-R-E, by Sherry Monahan and the editors of True West. An Accidental Planting. The origin of Washington's famous apple orchards is a delicious surprise. According to various newspaper accounts, the first apple tree planted in the state of Washington was at Fort Vancouver, which was built for the fur trappers in the area. The story begins at an 1824 dinner party in London to honor Sir George Simpson, who was embarking on a journey to Fort Vancouver. A young woman at that party served him an apple for dessert and asked him to take the seeds with him and plant them for her so he'd remember her. He obliged and tucked them into his vest pocket, made his journey, but forgot about the seeds. According to accounts, he donned the same vest 3 years later to attend another party at the fort. He found the seeds still there and recalled the young woman's request. He planted them, and much to his surprise, several trees sprouted, and this began Washington's apple crop. Another story comes from a Hudson Bay sailor on a ship rounding Cape Horn in 1826. The newspaper account claims the sailor loved the apple so much that he tucked the seeds into his vest pocket to plant at his new home in the wilderness. The sailor turned his clothes in for mending by a tailor who found the seeds. The tailor then turned them over to the gardener at Fort Vancouver who planted them. Regardless of how they made their way to Washington, apple trees did well, but remained mostly for private use in the mid to late 1800s. By the 1880s, reports of wholesale farming operations began to appear. In 1883, the first orchard was planted in the upper Wenatchee Valley near Kashmir. James Tulloch of Orcas Island planted 700 apple trees that bore fruit in January 1884. At this time, it was the largest orchard in San Juan County. And the local paper noted his perfectly lined trees were disease-free. They reported, "This fine orchard will be a regular and unfailing source of income to its enterprising proprietor." 7 years later, the San Juan Straits were considered nature's garden spot with 28,000 acres of rich land where the apple and prune orchards yielded $500 to an acre of fruit. In September 1890, W.F. Hickman had a ranch near Almota where he harvested 50 tons of apples. Varieties included Red Astrachan, William's early favorite, Golden, Gravestine, King Blue Permian, Canada Rainette, Blenheim, Fallwater, Paradise Winter Sweet, Ben Davis, Jersey Black, Rhode Island Greening, Gilpin, Gloria Mundi, Fall Pippin, Yellow Bellflower, Ladensburg, Pex Pleasant, Monmouth, English Russet, Golden Russet, Ortley, Belmont, Coles Keynes American Golden, Grimes Golden, Baldwin, and more. In 1891, the McIntosh Red, Romanti Autumn Strawberry, and Northern Spy were being tried. Apples became an everyday life in that part of Washington in the 1890s, and they were featured in a variety of events. One event was an apple-picking contest on Hood River in the rural northwest part of Oregon. While it was fun and a $10 prize was awarded, the intent was to show the importance of packing different varieties. Apple-eating contests were wildly popular at parties, and ladies of the Norwegian Lutheran Church in Spokane held a lemon and apple pie festival. And the Presbyterian Church held an apple guessing competition in which participants made a donation to guess the number in the barrel. Apple recipes filled the household hints section of the Washington papers. They included apple snow, apple pudding, baked apples, and even apple champagne. Best Historic Saloon of the West, the Palace Restaurant and Saloon, Prescott, Arizona. For the third year in a row, True West honors the Palace Restaurant and Saloon as the best of the West. The saloon's swinging doors have been opened on Montezuma Street, better known as Whiskey Row, in Prescott since at least 1877. Famously rebuilt in 1901 around its 1880s Brunswick Bar, which was carried across to the Courthouse Plaza during the Prescott Fire of 1900, the palace is Arizona's oldest operating saloon. In 1996, the palace permanently added a restaurant, which is well known for its cowboy cuisine, Old West dining atmosphere, and 19th century frontier reenactors. The palace also has a great display of historical artifacts from the Old West and a mural dedicated to the Western film Junior Bonner, which was filmed in the bar and just celebrated its 50th anniversary. Online, WhiskeyRowPalace.com. Reader's Choice, Miners and Stockman's Steakhouse and Spirits, Hartville, Wyoming. Best Historic Restaurant, the Fort Restaurant and Tesoro Cultural Center, Morrison, Colorado. The Fort, built by visionary proprietors Samuel and Elizabeth Arnold, is just 2 miles from Morrison in the Red Rock County, southwest of Denver. Famous for its bison dishes, game meats, seafood, and homemade desserts, the picturesque restaurant is part of an adobe complex that the founders modeled on historic Bent's Fort. Online, thefort.com. Reader's Choice, Big Nose Kate's, Tombstone, Arizona. Best Chuck Wagon Cook-Off, Wild, Wild, Wild Fest, Andrews, Texas. Celebrating the diverse culture and heritage of the Wild Wild West is the motto of this popular festival in Andrews. The 2-day family-friendly event will be held Friday and Saturday, April 21st and 22nd, and includes a barbecue cook-off, live music, carnival rides, food, arts and crafts, and Old West vendors. Online, wildwildwestfest.com. Reader's Choice, Lincoln County Cowboy Symposium, Ruidoso Downs, New Mexico. Best Chuck Wagon Show and Supper, National Cowboy Symposium and Celebration, Lubbock, Texas. Western Heritage is celebrated annually at the National Cowboy Symposium and Celebration in Lubbock, with several living history events, including the ever-popular Chuck Wagon Cook-Off. Attendees to one of True West's perennial favorite cowboy events will be entertained by cowboy poetry and storytelling, Western writers and authors, panels, film and movie seminars, horse handling demonstrations, a horse-themed parade, American Indian activities and presentations, exhibits of Western artworks and merchandise, and a Youth Wild West Day. Online, cowboy.org. Reader's Choice, Fort Hays Chuck Wagon Supper and Show, Rapid City, South Dakota. Recipe, Farmhouse Apple Pie, 6 to 8 green apple variety, 1 cup sugar, 1/4 teaspoon nutmeg, 1 double pie crust. Place a single crust into a pie pan. Peel, core, and thinly slice the apples. Combine sugar and nutmeg. Set aside. Layer the apples, sprinkling layers with sugar until filled. Place top crust and seal tight. Poke air holes in the top crust for steam to escape. Bake at 350 degrees for about 45 minutes or until the apples are tender. Recipe adapted from Olympia's Washington Standard, August 24th, 1883. True West Best of the West 2023 Firearms by Phil Spangenberger and the editors of True West. 1873, Year of the Gun. 2023 is a special year for several iconic Old West guns, as well as True West magazine and firearms editor Phil Spangenberger. The year 1873 could easily be called the Year of the Gun, since 150 years ago this year, saw the introduction of several of the Old West's most iconic firearms and their ammunition. Now, in 2023, a century and a half later, this armament still holds great appeal to scores of firearms enthusiasts. As most True West readers are undoubtedly aware, 1873 saw the debut of the famed Colt Single Action Army Revolver, along with its most popular cartridge, the 45 Colt. Also during this year, production of Colt's entire series of percussion revolvers ended, and Winchester brought out their last centerfire, iron-framed 1873 lever-action rifle. Chambered in 44 Winchester Central Fire Caliber, 44 WCF, better known as the 4440, both firearms became symbol of the Wild West. Not to be outdone, the U.S. government's Springfield Armory previewed the 1873 trapdoor rifle and carbine in its then latest chambering, the 4570 Government, the gun and cartridge of the Indian fighting soldier. Two, it is believed that the popular Merwin, Hulbert & Company revolvers also began production around this time. As famous as these firearms were and still are, in the past 150 years, each arm's ammo has become sporting favorites, earning solid reputations in their own right. The 45 Colt, the most powerful commercial handgun cartridge until the 357 Magnum, was introduced in 1935, became one of the most popular revolver rounds of the era. Today, it's a popular handgun cartridge with big bore revolver enthusiasts due to its accuracy, knockdown and stopping power, and the diversity it offers in reloading for custom handguns. The 4440 cartridge quickly gained popularity in the Wild West when companies like Colt, Remington, Smith & Wesson, and others began chambering their six guns in that round. This move gave frontiersmen the ability to fire the same cartridge in their rifle and handgun. In modern times, many replica lever guns are chambered with this frontier favorite. The saying, "Old soldiers never die," certainly rings true with the 4570 government cartridge. Used as the standard load for the U.S. military from 1873 to 1892, this powerful cartridge was also popular with sporting single-shot and repeating rifles of the Wild West, including the 1874 Sharps Winchester Model 1886, Marlin's 1881, Remington's Rolling Block Rifles, and more. The 4570 in its various beefed-up, smokeless power loadings has become a favorite short-range hunting round, boasting the power to take everything from deer to grizzly bears in North America and many species in Africa, including Cape Buffalo. The year 2023 also holds special meaning in other ways to True West's staff and our readers. This year marks our 70th anniversary of publishing, without interruption, articles about the Old West, the current West, and its history, people, places, celebrations, and unique culture known and often emulated around the world. For nearly three quarters of a century, and spanning two of them, 1953 to 2023, True West has brought the flavor and undeniable facts about the American West's colorful past and present to our readers. Like these iconic guns and their famous cartridges, True West has been woven into the fabric of the living legacy of the American frontier. It's the magazine most turned to when Wild West enthusiasts, or should I say True West maniacs, want to know what happened in the wild and woolly days, and what is happening in today's West. On a more personal note, yours truly is celebrating 20 years as the firearms editor for True West, a record I'm very proud of. I've thoroughly enjoyed offering my writing since 2003 and have made many new friends through my association with True West. Ironically, it is also my 50th anniversary as a professional gun writer, having started with Guns and Ammo magazine in 1973, serving as their Black Powder and Gunsmoke editor during my tenure there. It's been an interesting and fun ride, and we plan on keeping our cinch tight for the coming Western adventures and True West moments. Saddle up, and let's keep hitting the trail together. Best Gun Leather Artisan, Old West Reproductions, Florence, Montana. For a second year in a row, True West honors Rick Bachman and the Old West Reproductions for his world-class leather craftsmanship. He's been handcrafting authentic museum-quality Western-style gun leather and other cowboy gear like cuffs, spur leathers, saddle pockets, saddle scabbards, and more for over 32 years. In our opinion, Bachman's work is among the finest reproductions ever offered anywhere. Online, oldwestreproductions.com. Reader's Choice, John Bianchi Frontier Gun Leather, Rancho Mirage, California. Best Firearm Engraver Firearm Restoration, Turnbull Restoration, Bloomfield, New York. For over 37 years, Turnbull Restoration Company, Incorporated has been the nation's leader in restoration and custom upgrades on vintage handguns, rifles, and shotguns. True West's editors and industry leaders recognize Turnbull as the go-to company for restoration, period correct metal finishes, and custom reproductions. Online, TurnbullRestoration.com. Reader's Choice, EMF Company, Santa Ana, California. Best Cowboy Action Pistol, Colt Single Action 45 Army Revolver. In commemoration of the iconic Colt SAA Revolver's 150th anniversary, True West's editors honor it as the best and most famous handgun in the history of the United States. Historians to working cowboys, Old West firearm fans to Western stars, think the Colt 45 is still the most essential Old West firearm to own and carry. The Colt Single Action 45 Army Revolver is truly one of the greatest and most recognized American icons known worldwide. Online, Colt.com. Reader's Choice, Taylor's and Company 1860 Army Black Powder Revolver. Best Cowboy Action Rifle, Cimarron Firearms 1860 Iron Framed Henry 44 WCF. Cimarron's replica is truly remarkable. The richly colored, case-hardened steel-framed Henry is fitted with the standard 24-inch octagon barrel in either 44-40 or 45 Colt caliber. The iron frame model with the walnut stock also sports a blued butt plate and a color case hardened trigger, hammer, and lever. Cimarron's iron frame Henry replica is authentic in every detail and is recognized as one of the straightest shooting repeaters available on the market today. Online, Cimarron-firearms.com. Reader's Choice, Uberti 1873 Limited Edition Rifle Deluxe. Best Action Shotgun, EMF Company, Hartford S-by-S Shotgun. EMF has manufactured a classic with its popular 12-gauge Hartford S-by-S Shotgun. The side-by-side shotgun with its 20-inch barrels can be easily opened with one hand, allowing for very fast loading and extraction of shells. The walnut pistol grip stock is checkered. Both hunters and performers in cowboy action shooting events enjoy using the Hartford S-by-S shotgun. Online, emf-company.com. Reader's Choice, Cimarron Firearms, 1878 Coach Gun. Best Single Shot Rifle, Shiloh Sharps 1874 Quigley Big Timber, Montana. The Sharps was the first choice of the frontier buffalo hunter And Shiloh Sharps continues that tradition of top quality arms. The 34-inch octagon-barreled 4570 or 45110 1874 Quigley is a modern-day favorite with hunters, target shooters, and collectors. The 1874 comes with the military buttstock, patch box, standard grade wood, a pewter tip, Hartford collar, double set triggers, semi-buckhorn rear sight, mid-range vernier tang sight, and a number 111 globe aperture front sight. Additional custom features are available. Online, ShilohRifle.com. Reader's Choice Uberti 1885 High Wall Rifle 4570. Best Firearm Kit Gun. The Hawken Shop Hawken Rifle Kit. For the second year in a row, True West editors honor the Hawken Shop's Hawken Rifle Kit as the best in the West. The most famous of Plains rifles, the Hawken was the favorite of mountain men Jediah Smith, Kit Carson, Jim Bridger, and others. Craft your own rifle from the Hawken Shop's Hawken Kit. It's 95% finished and requires minimal hand tools and patience for the final fitting. Online, thehawkenshop.com. Reader's Choice, Dixie Gun Works, Dixie Pieta, 1858 Remington, Texas Revolver Kit. Best Commemorative Rifle. Golden Boy Silver Anniversary Edition 22 SLLR. To celebrate 25 years of Guns for Great Causes, Henry Repeating Arms is proud to present the Golden Boy Silver Anniversary Edition. This rifle is all about giving back to the foundations and organizations that Henry proudly supports, and 100% of the proceeds are being donated for a total of $1 million. These 1-of-1,000 rifles feature a blue-steeled octagon barrel, hardware nickel-plated receiver cover, barrel band, butt plate, and inlaid medallion. Each rifle has the words Silver Anniversary 1 of 100 engraved and silver filled on the upper tang and a unique serial number range. The Golden Boy Silver Anniversary Edition can only be purchased directly from Henry Repeating Arms. Online, henryusa.com. Reader's Choice 1876 Centennial Tom Horn Signature Rifle, Cimarron Firearms, Fredericksburg, Texas.
Thank you for joining us for the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Your narrator has been Jack. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Noon Book Hour, followed by Eyes on Success at 1 p.m. This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, Sean Connery stars in Goldfinger.
Stop! Look! He's gunning for trouble. 007. It spells... Bond.
Shocking.
He's the idol of every woman.
Who?
James Bond.
The envy of every man. The nemesis of the treacherous Mr. Goldfinger.
Goldfinger!
Goldfinger, a crowned and thrill-making cinema entertainment.
The man with the mind.
A three-time winner for Fleming Secret Agent 007.
My name is Pussy Galore.
Isn't it customary to grant the condemned man his last request?
You've asked for this.
Come and purr over Anna Blackman as Pussy Galore. The female who is all feline. Also starring Gert Gruber as Goldfinger. International cheat. International menace.
Gentlemen! Goldfinger. Why, weren't we told by New York and the West Coast we're in on this? Goldfinger, I made a delivery. Where is my money?
And you owe me $1 million.
Goldfinger, the man with a finger in every pie. His goal, Fort Knox, the world's biggest bank. His enemy, 007, the world's wiliest, toughest gentleman agent with a license to kill. 007, it spells Bond. James Bond, mixing business with girls and thrills. Girls and fun. Girls and danger. The hotter the danger, the cooler he takes it.
I think you've made your point, Goldfinger. Thank you for the demonstration.
Choose your next witticism carefully, Mr. Bond. It may be your last.
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Goldfinger, audio described, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
The Midland Lighthouse for the Blind is currently hiring a production worker. Job summary: responsible for a variety of hand assembly production of writing instruments, safety and security items as directed by manufacturing manager or working foreman.